The Cultural and Outdoor Resources Finance Division will come to order 8:40 on Friday morning, April 24th. There's a change in the agenda this morning. I'd like us all to take a moment of quiet thought. If you pray, say a prayer. Representative Virginius was rear-ended by a drunk driver last night on the way home. Her car was totaled. She was taken to a hospital. She has been released from the hospital and is at home. And she's badly bruised, but she is unable to come to work this morning. And so let's just think about that a little bit. Thank you. And keep thinking during the day. Because of this, and because Representative Davis had an emergency yesterday morning, I'm going to start with back to the Emerald Ash Borer, who seems to be gaining power, especially in the House of Representatives in the back row. Because every time I leave my desk, it appears for any period of time, a new ash borer appears on my little collage, turned into a big mark of ash borers on my desk. And I hope that that's not a sign, because we're going to need that gate put up around the state faster, if that's the case. But Representative Davis, yesterday we heard Representative Loeffler's comments, and she gave us a lot to think about. And so you also have a bill about the disease, and so take your chance.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House file 2338. I've been working with Representative Loeffler, who has really been leading on this issue, and I carved out a few things either yesterday or the day before. Houston County, which is one of the counties I have the privilege of representing, was quarantined for ash trees, basically an ash tree products. And House File 2338 puts $1.5 million into the for the Department of Natural Resources to work with the Minnesota Department of Agriculture and the University of Minnesota for public awareness and to get some folks down in Houston County to see if they can detect them. And I hope that it's limited to your desk, Madam Chair. I've never seen so many ash borer in my life.
And all sizes,
big ones
too.
So, and I hope that's the extent of what happens in Minnesota, but realistically, they're knocking at the door. They're across the river. They were found in Victory, Wisconsin, just across the river from the district I represent. And if you look at the bill, just to be very clear, there are several places where it says general fund, and there's $125,000 appropriated to the Minnesota Forest Resources Council. And then $5 million transferred to an emergency forest pest response account. And, you know, as this moves forward, and I thank the chair for, Chair Murphy, for your quick action on this, because I feel this is an emergency. And the testimony we had a couple days ago, where the gentleman, I think it's from the DNR or Department of Ag, said that I'm not going to like his answer. He was exactly correct. I thought there must be some way to eradicate these pests, but apparently you have to try and slow them down in their march across whatever area they want to go across. So with that being said, the bill that I have will be changed along the way here, whether it's an amendment form as we mark up the various bills from the 3/8 money. but obviously there's not a lot of general fund money available. So what I'll be looking at is even either in House File 2131 out of the fourth protection account or whatever that's called in Representative Hansen's bill. I'll be looking at some different areas too. And who knows if these numbers are the right numbers. We just put some numbers in to get the bill moving forward. So obviously, and I requested to have a draft this way, general fund's not too hopeful. So I believe that in House Files 2131, where they talked about the three different things you want to do, and one of them was protection. If this is in protection of our forests and natural resources, I'm not quite sure what is, but with that being said, I stand for any questions. And of course, the general fund, I would change that to one of the bills where the 3/8 money is coming from. And if these numbers are correct, I don't know. I'm totally open to whatever this committee or the legislature would say on that as we get more advice throughout the process.
Thank you. Questions? Well, I encourage you to continue working with Representative Loeffler and keeping all of us apprised of what's happening, and I think staying in touch with the Department of Natural Resources and the Department of Ag will be helpful for all of us too. And so you will be the people telling us what's going on as we proceed in the next month.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Appreciate it a lot.
Madam Chair, I move the minutes. Oh, I'm not going to move the minutes. I wasn't even here.
I'll move the minutes, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Torkelson. Representative Torkelson moves the minutes in the packet as printed. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The minutes are adopted. I'm going to go on the agenda to House File 1031, Comprehensive Statewide Sustainable Water Resources Detailed Framework, funding provided and money appropriated. This was a bill that was discussed in, did it start in your committee, Representative Ethan, and then it went to Environment Finance, and it has been redirected to this committee. And Ms. Shore and Ms. Taylor are here. Ms. Taylor is from Nonpartisan House Research. Ms. Shore is from GFL Caucus Research. And they have agreed to give us the outline so that we can hear about this and proceed and see which parts of this we like or could use in the omnibus bill and the governance bill. Welcome, Ms. Taylor and Ms. Shore. I'm pleased that you could be here and to fill in.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Janelle Taylor with House Research. I'm just going to briefly walk through House File 1031. What it does is it appropriates $750,000 to the University of Minnesota to develop a 20-year framework for using the constitutionally dedicated money in the Clean Water Fund. It requires the University of Minnesota's Water Resources Center to work in cooperation with federal, state, local government, and private nonprofits with expertise in water resources. It does set up some requirements requiring the framework to identify infrastructure needs, drinking water, groundwater and surface water, stormwater, agricultural and industrial needs. It also requires the framework to address climate change and other development and land use. It does require the U to work through the LCCMR's work plan process and also provide the same information back to the legislature. It does require the plan to speak to the legislature, submitted to the legislature by January 1st of 2011. I guess that's kind of a brief walkthrough. If you have questions, I'll try to answer them.
Thank you very much. Ms. Shore, could you talk to us and perhaps about the University of Minnesota, how that was picked?
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Eileen Shore. I'm with the DFL Research Department. The University of Minnesota was picked primarily because there's been a long-standing working relationship with the university, and especially recently the university, a number of people from the university, prepared the long-term, long-range conservation preservation plan, which I think your committee has seen and certainly has been a focus for many of us in looking to an organized outline of how we all will proceed. And that was done under the auspices of the LCCMR. So we have expertise that has been dealing with these issues very recently.
Okay, thank you. Questions? Representative Harkless, or comments?
Thank you, Madam Chair. First, a comment on some earlier discussion. I would volunteer to bring my chainsaw to the Capitol and cut your desk down and properly dispose of it.
Well, what would Cass Gilbert
do? I understand it's infected with ash borers, and we certainly don't want it to spread to the rest of the house floor.
Well, I haven't seen any of those little holes yet.
That's good. I guess a couple of questions, but first I'd start with, and this is probably more for the committee as a whole or the chair, I'm curious as to what our relationship will be as we go on with the LCCMR. I think it's important that activities be coordinated between these committees, but I'm kind of jealous of our own turf also. Mm-hmm. So if someone could testifiers or the chair could describe for me what we might expect as we move forward in our relationship as the Constitutional Amendment Committee to the LCCMR Committee.
That's a point we haven't had the LCCMR before us either, but that's a hole in my planning so far, but it's on my list. I don't have that, and oh, good, Representative Egan, you came back. Okay. Within our caucus, we talked about it a little bit, but I haven't talked about it with your caucus, but we haven't had the LCMR before the committee as a whole, except in the public testimony phase in the early assignments. But Ms. Shore, you've been involved in some of the research gathering and might have insight, not speaking certainly for Representative Genius on what her goal is, but certainly you have a knowledge of how she looks upon the LCMR in relation to this a little bit, because she talks about it from time to time. Ms. Shore?
Madam Chair and members of the committee, she does. I perhaps can give you a little bit of a perspective since I staff the Environment, Finance, and Policy Committee and have dealings with the LCCMR in those contexts, as well as being responsible for covering the LCCMR. My experience is that organization and the staff, especially of the LCCMR, are supportive of the work that we do in the committee. I think I won't say that I know what Representative Wardenius is thinking, but my sense is that to some degree the LCCMR has worked as a think tank for the committees. They do a lot of the research or have people do a lot of the research that we then later use in bills. But it is very much advisory. They are very much a supportive organization for us as working on environmental issues, or I think probably anyone else.
And Ms. Taylor and Representative Torkelson, I have met with the staff at LCMR for one meeting, and they offered to be a resource for us, and was pretty much that they had lots of background information on projects and brought me up to date on where we were and where they were, but said that they would be willing to work with us in any way. And that's where I am at this point with them. There's also the effect within Environment Committee too, of the effects of the lottery money that affects some of the things that our four funds are going to deal, our three funds are going to deal with.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to the testifiers. Thank you. Where I'm going with this is I'm very much in favor of the coordination between the committees, but it seems that this particular project and research projects in general might be more appropriately funded by the LCCMR because their charge is different than our charge. Our charge, in my mind anyway, is to get as much of this money on the ground doing projects that people can see as quickly as possible, and I just feel it'd be more appropriate if a project like this was funded by the LCCMR. Certainly it will inform our work and should, and there needs to be a dialogue between the committees, but how we spend our money and how they spend their money to me is somewhat of a different procedure or different goals, I should say.
So Representative Tarkelson, am I hearing what you said? The things that are sought after in House File 1031 are good idea, and we should have them done, but LCMR should be asked to pay for them.
Well, the validity of the project is not where I'm at right now.
Okay.
I do have some concerns about how much we invest in 25-year plans, because I know how dynamic the world is, and I know how dynamic our approach to conservation has been, at least in my experience of 28 years of farming. I've participated in the CRP program for, over 20 years, and the requirements and goals of that government-run program have changed dramatically in the time that I've been involved. When I first enrolled land in the CRP program, they wanted highly, highly wind erodible land. So I found a nice sand. I had a sandy hilltop that was susceptible to wind erosion. I put that into the program, and at that time they wanted switchgrass, so I planted switchgrass. 10 or 12 years later, when that particular contract ran out, they no longer scored that kind of land highly, so I had to plow up that field and put it back into production, and then they wanted the land down by the river into CRP for good reasons. And the planting requirements, of course, had also changed, so the little bit of CRP that was still in switchgrass had to be switched over to the proper mix of, at that time, it was actually reed canary grass. That has changed since, and they now ask for a mixture of grasses and forbs, et cetera, et cetera. The point being that as time goes on, things change, and we can try to look ahead 25 years and should, but I don't think we can create the crystal ball that will predict what the future really holds as we move forward in these processes. So that's really two separate arguments.
Yes.
The funding piece is one argument. The nature of this particular project is another argument.
Thank you. Any other additional comments on House File 1031, Representative Davis?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to the testifiers. I stayed up all night last night. I've read this entire bill. I just want you to know that I've done my due diligence here. And I can understand a lot of it here, and we don't want to harm ecosystems. I understand that. We don't want to degrade water quality. And it goes on, ground and surface water, stormwater, agricultural industrial needs, And then on line 1.23, it talks about climate change, development of land use, and demographics. There's two things that kind of put up red flag for me, and I've got to concede on one, but I won't on the other. It's climate change and development of land use, and if you're going to clean up the water, yes, you have to look at land use. What is it being used for? Is Representative Torkelson going to be putting some grasses down by the river? That's a different land use to keep sediments from going into the river. That makes sense to me, but do we have to have climate change in this bill? Because, you know, I'm just a poor farm boy from Fillmore County, and the temperature goes up and the temperature goes down, and we call that weather. Is it really necessary to have the words climate change, or could we say, I guess we can do whatever we want, but if it read the interfaces of development and land use demographics, so on and so forth, how does climate change help this bill?
And Taylor? Madam Chair, Representative David, I'm not going to speak for Representative Lugenius, and this is the word I know she specifically chose, and I guess the use of climate change here would, I guess, tie it into, you know.
Madam Chair, I'm sorry, this is Representative Lugenius, and so she's not here for it, and these fine folks did what the representative wanted, and that's fine. But I'm just trying to avoid 3-hour floor debates on issues because I know where it'll come from and it's not just me. So.
We'll circle that one.
Whether you want it or not.
Just a comment, Madam Chairman and Representative Davis, with the new administration now and a new science advisor, that climate change is no longer a dubious concept. It's now.
I've already got the word circle.
Madam Chair.
Representative.
No, thanks for circling the word.
Ms. Carr, will you circle the word too, please?
I'm thinking Representative Emery.
All right. Anything else on 1031 at this particular time? All right. We'll set that aside. House file for now. House File 1673, Conservation Easement Management Account established.
Madam Chair, members, I'm just going to walk through briefly the bill. The overall concept of the bill is to provide payment upfront for obligations that the state incurs when it purchases land, either in fee or through easement. The first section, this would require conservation easements that are purchased with state funds to have a statement of the general public purpose of the conservation easement within the agreement. And then Section 2 would establish a long-term land management account, and this account would receive contributions that would be required, and these contributions would be from holders of conservation easements or land acquired in fee with state funds that are appropriated after July 1st of 2009. It would apply to all land or conservation easement purchases, even if it's just a portion of the funds were supplied by state funds. There is an exception for people who can demonstrate a history of providing long-term land management or conservation easement management. And the intent of this is to for large organizations that have a history of with conservation easements or long-term land management to exempt them from having to put a contribution into the account. The account rate right now, I think, is 5% of the overall acquisition value is what would need to be deposited into the account. And the appraised, it's actually the appraised value, and the appraised value for the purposes of this section would either be the most recent assessor's estimated market value or the most recent purchase price or the most recent appraised value, and that'd be the highest of those three. Going down on page 3, subdivision 4, the money in the account could only be spent on the management, monitoring, and enforcement of the conservation easements or on management of lands that are purchased with state funds. And there is a provision here that would not allow the funds to be appropriated until after July 1st, 2017. The next section 3 was an amendment offered by Representative Gill and the Finance Committee, and it sort of does the same thing for PILT payments, kind of requiring an upfront payment. The first section would just state that lands for which a one-time PILT payment was received are not eligible for the traditional PILT payment. And then Section 4 sets up the one-time payment. The first subdivision just states that the payment is equal to 25% of the appraised value of acquired natural resources land, so this would just be acquired land, not other lands that would become eligible for PILT, you know, for due to tax forfeiture or whatever. So it'd just be those lands, and it's just for new land. Lands currently receiving PILT payments would still continue to receive PILT payments under the existing program. The payment would be calculated similar to the existing PILT payments. It would be a one-time payment to the counties, and the counties would receive the payment for all the acquired natural resources land for that year. In determining the appraised value for the land, it's similar to the PILT, current PILT payments, except that if the market value is less than $100,000, there's no appraisal required. Subdivision 3 sets up the technical transfer of the funds, similar to the existing PILT program, but it does provide that, for example, if the funds or if the land was acquired with a certain account, it would require this one-time PILT payment to be made from that account if it was possible. For example, bond funds might not be constitutional to do that, so that would not be required, and therefore the Commissioner of Natural Resources would be required to determine where the funds would come. But otherwise, the money for this one-time payment is required to come from the account where that the funds for the acquisition is. And on page 5, subdivision 4 just sets out a use for the funds. Unlike PILT, there's no, at this time, there isn't a requirement for how the funds to be used, but it does sort of put some suggesting language to the counties that they should set up an account and draw interest and use that to sort of cover the PILT payments into the future. But it's not a requirement. The county would be able to use the funds at their discretion.
Yes. Oh, Representative Hansen. I was, would you please, Ms. Short, additions?
No additions, Madam Chair.
Okay. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think we had some questions as this moved through the committee, particularly on the appraisal. I think that the Board of Water and Soil Resources uses a different appraisal method. And I think I see both the department and Bowser here. And I know we have to be done fairly soon, but if we could maybe quickly get them to comment. Both the DNR and the Board of Water and Soil Resources.
Yes, we could do that. Welcome to the committee.
Good morning. Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Julie Clocker. I'm the Assistant Director for the Minnesota Board of Water and Soil Resources. And thank you for the opportunity to provide comments. I know that you had a late night last night, and so whatever comments we provide, we will follow up in writing afterwards, so you have some very specific information for you. The coffee might not just be working to the full extent. So a couple of the questions, and one of them is about the appraisals. What we use for our RIM WRP program currently and our RIM program overall is a formula system that's based on tillable land values. And so going through an appraisal process will add an additional step for us. And so we'd like to submit some language recommendations that would allow for us to use our current system that's in place. So that's one portion of it. We do also have questions about our program right now, the RIM-WRP program, matches up state dollars with federal dollars in order to purchase the easement, the conservation easement. And so we would like some clarity as far as the amount that we contribute, the 5%, is it 5% of only the state funds that are going towards the conservation easement or the entire conservation easement? Because we will not be able to get funds from the federal government in order to contribute to this. So that's one of our questions, and we'll submit some language ideas that would provide some clarity to that. So those are two of the questions that we have. We also, the exemption that provided with the commissioner of the DNR, we'd like to suggest that that exemption would apply also to the Board of Water and Soil Resources. And then we also have some questions about the statute in under the expenditures 84C.021, and we need to make sure that those also apply to us. There's specific language for our RIM program. So we would like to submit some adjustments to this bill that allow us to implement the RIM program, which we're responsible for, according to how that program is implemented and the appropriate statute reference for that.
We would appreciate receiving those.
Thanks. Thank you.
Comments. Questions? Thank you very much. DNR? Mr. Meyer, do you know what we're talking about? 1673?
Yes, Madam Chair. For the record, Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources. We have been working with Representative Lagunias on this bill for quite some time, and also staff. Some of the concerns we have, and I think we're going to be able to address them, is the account established in Section 2, stated long-term land management account. The department doesn't buy the land management rights oftentimes on these easements. If you think about a forest legacy easement, what we're securing is the ability to access the land and also the development rights, so these lands can't be fragmented. The one that's in everybody's mind right now is the Brandon, the Forest Legacy Project, which the Heritage Council has recommended. Those 187,000 acres, the easements that we're purchasing, if you think of it as a bundle of sticks, we're purchasing the sticks that say that they cannot fragment and sell the land. They have to manage the land in an appropriate environmental manner, and that we're providing access. So we're providing several of these sticks out of this bundle of land rights that the private landowner owns. The land will remain in public ownership. They will pay property taxes on it, and they will be able to manage the timber in an environmental friendly fashion approved by sustainable timber practices. So we don't buy the management rights. We're buying different rights. So what we're suggesting here is to change it to conservation easement monitoring and enforcement accounts rather than long-term management accounts, because we don't have the management rights that we're purchasing. The other major concern we have is the amount of money that needs to be deposited into this account. 5% across the board doesn't work. If you again go to that large-scale easement, 5% of a $40+ million transaction is probably too much money needed for the enforcement monitoring. We're suggesting that we need about $750,000 for that management of that easement into perpetuity. If you look at a $10,000 or $20,000 easement or a $100,000 easement to make the math simpler, just what is the right number to have? So we're trying to figure out how do we deal with that number that needs to be appropriated. The other concern is that the bill doesn't allow access to those funds until 2017. You may need money for those funds sooner than that. So we're trying to work with Representative Lagunias. She understands our concerns. We're hoping to iron out some of those things today, but we will do that whenever we get a chance in the near future with her and the staff to come back, hopefully with those issues addressed.
Thank you. Mr. Meyer, Commissioner Meyer, Section 4, is that a general fund cost?
Madam Chair, on line 3.11?
No, on section 4, 4.7.
Madam Chair, this is a bill. This section of the bill was amended to this bill in Environment Finance Committee by Representative Dill. It's uncertain where these dollars would come from, and that's a good point that you bring up. Currently, fill payments do come out of the general fund. They are appropriated to the Department of Natural Resources. They're expended by the Department of Revenue. I think both bodies are trying to consolidate that function in the Department of Revenue. If this moves forward, I think we need to clarify where these funds come from and the ability to do this. I know there's certain entities that have language in statute that allow bond payments to be used, bond dollars to be used for this one-time payment. I think we also need to explore the constitutional dollars and make sure that they are eligible to make these payments. Certain dollars the department has, such as game and fish dollars or federal dollars, just say for land acquisition. We need to figure out how do we do this payment. So certainly we're looking and exploring all different types of means to help alleviate the issues that we have in parts of the state about acquiring land. In the other bill that we're talking about, 1086, not to change subject, but there's a language in there that would prohibit wetland credits to be used for any kind of mitigation. We're concerned about giving up that stick because there are portions of the state where those credits are very valuable, and that may be an option rather than PILT or a one-time payment to allow a county to maintain those credits as we acquire that land rather than provide them a perpetual payment into the future. So we're trying to think out of the box and creative as we look at these types of issues that are out there and hoping that we don't pass any legislation that has unintended consequences, throwing the baby out with the bathwater, so to speak. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Well, we're not going to throw the baby. Representative Sober.
Madam Chair, thank you. I was called all of the constituents there, but one of the things I think we have to be a little bit careful about is what Mr. Meyer has established on making sure that the land and the management of the land doesn't become a responsibility for us if there's a company that's already doing it. And what I'm stating to you is the land and company. Their interest in this, of course, well, our interest is in keeping them in perpetuity to manage their land and have them do it. And I don't want the state to take over that responsibility when they're doing a great job on it already. And we have to be a little bit careful, I think, in saying, well, you have to pay a fee to the state to manage the land, then why would they not just not manage their land? That's, we have to be careful how that's worded. I have sent the language of this and the other bill up to the plan and company to have some action to it. I know I had a conversation with you, and you, I'm sure, will address their concerns on that issue.
We are very interested in hearing, in seeing everyone's concerns. And the reason yesterday when we talked, when I was questioned about whether we were going to have public testimony yesterday. These bills have been heard and have had some public testimony. I intend to have public testimony again on a draft composition bill that will be, is in the formulation stages. But I said that if anyone had comments to make about any bills in particular that have been on the agenda or are on the agenda, and that just put them down in little bullet points on a piece of paper, because you can come up to the podium and you can speak, and we listen intently while you're speaking. But after you're done, we have nothing to remind us exactly what we said, unless we take quick short notes, and usually that's not with us. But if you give us something in writing, Representative Davis can bring that sheet to his caucus when he's meeting with his caucus members. I can bring the sheet to my caucus when I'm meeting with the caucus members. We can have the sheets in front of us when we're all meeting in committee. And we can have your orderly, organized thoughts to ask you to come down and ask specific questions about them. So we get about four times the usage out of something in writing than we do in just hearing it. Not that we don't want to hear you, but at this stage of putting things together, you have the possibility of greater impact with some written notes. And just saying, don't do it, doesn't exactly give us information that we can use if we want to do it. But we're willing to work with anyone. And Representative Hansen knows a lot about this. Representative Eakin knows a lot about these bills. Representative Torkelson knows an awful lot of these bills, and he's on those committees that have heard parts or ideas of this for years now, even though he's a new representative. I would like to use those remarks to go into more of what I'm saying, what I want to say, and since we're past time of adjournment, but this responsibility that this committee has been the most exciting legislative experience that I've had in my 32 years at the legislature. We have never had an opportunity like this in all the years that I've been here, that I've been invited to participate in anyway. The people on this committee, I don't know how they were picked. I didn't have any input in it, but I could not have picked a better group of people with varied interests, extremely talented people to work with, backgrounds that are diverse, contacts that go back many years over many communities in this state, and a total mixture of personalities that meld together and work off of each other. The staff before this committee, the partisan staff, the nonpartisan staff, are the very, very best that we have in the DFL caucus, in the Republican caucus, in our research shop upstairs. No time have I ever seen as many ex officio members assigned to a committee, but to have the assigned ex officio members in the constant attendance and participation. It is an adventure that we are thoroughly enjoying and that we are thoroughly committed to in putting the best that we can put out without big, fat mistakes. The audience, the people that have been participating since day one, since they didn't know what they were going to have to say in their 90 seconds, or what does she mean, bring a picture? Right up to the people that have just caught on in the last 2.5 weeks. Oh my gosh, there's a committee that's going to deal with our fate that we haven't paid any attention to. We welcome you. if you came the first day and have come to every single meeting, or if you're just coming in the last day. We welcome you. We welcome your input. We want to know it because we don't have all the answers and we want to make the right answers. We don't have a deadline. I am hopeful that we will get the draft bill out in the next few days, first week of May. We would rather have the best product we can deliver than a rushed product. Floor sessions aren't going to go on for 14-hour days after Monday. But we will have new challenges of time management because conference committees will be scheduled and our members will be here, there, and whatever. But we are going to be meeting on a daily basis. And people have access to us because we walk through the hall and you can grab us. You can send notes in. It's nice if you put the subject matter on those notes so we can gear up to knowing if it's clean water or outdoor heritage or if it's governance. Yesterday I got a note, did not know what it was about. I thought, oh, somebody's going to yell at me about 1086, that we just can't deal with it. I got out there, and there was a coalition of people that strongly support 1673. I thought, oh, good, I'm glad I came out. All that being said, we are going to have a bill. We're going to have articles in the bill. One article dealing with outdoor heritage issues. One article dealing with clean water, with the drinking water account address. One article dealing with parks and trails. And one article dealing with arts education, arts access, culture, and history. And an article somehow worked in there, or at least the subject matter worked in there, about governance. And not just the governance of the arts, but the governance of how these four funds, accounts, four funds and the accounts will be working under the same umbrella. There are certain things that have to be worked out, but I have strong feelings that there should be an umbrella, that people, there shouldn't be a whole lot of difference between the management of the Outdoor Heritage Fund from the management of the Clean Water Fund, from the management of the Parks and Trails Fund, and from the management of the arts funds. But there are differences, I know that. And you're going to point them out to me, and we're going to listen. But we can work it into a bill so we're not four separate silos. We are something that the people voted for, and they are going to be able to see what we're doing and where we're doing it. I have a strong belief that one fund can't go ahead without thinking of its impact on the other funds, and that the goals that we adopted in this committee, and made people aware that we had them, the process took long enough to get those goals, that they have to be considered in all four funds. And one fund can't decide that we'll do this goal and another fund can do another goal. But this is the first year we have made great attempts. The clean water recommendations are being very seriously considered. The outdoor heritage recommendations are being very, very seriously considered. The arts and culture and history suggestions and recommendations are being very, very considered very, very carefully. It's a little hard when more than two groups think that they should get 50% of the funding to distribute, but we're doing some new math and it's going to work out. We have great respect for all the people that said, and all the groups that said, we can manage this. Please put your trust in us. And we will go forth. But we respect that very, very much. But from the beginning, we said we wanted something different too. Not just more of the same. And it came out in the people's expectations when they talked to us at the various times in our public testimony that we don't want just more of the same. We want more with thinking outside the box, as the commissioner just said. We know that where it came out the most was in parks and trails, and some things get overused. Some things need restoring. But the people, I don't believe that the people that voted yes voted for paying the light bill. So we're trying to bring everything together in a wonderful way without mistakes that our grandkids are going to be so proud of. And in order to do that, we all have to work cooperatively, and we can't say, do my thing, but don't do their thing, because, you know, that's not right. It's all our thing. It's all our vision. And we need to work together and do it. And in that is our commitment, and that is our responsibility, and that is what I intend to see this done. And we are going to have something to bring to a conference committee, and then won't we have fun? Any other comments or additions to my remarks? The time for tomorrow's meeting will be announced later in the day. I hope it's not as late as this morning's was, but we will, Mr. Chen will have something. No, you went faster than I ever thought you would, Rip Fenton. It was great. This meeting is adjourned.